that's there, as well as Xerox copies will be on the desk where you registered in the lobby after the talk.
So, okay, thank you very much for the invitation to speak in this workshop. Now, I'm not totally sure that my talk qualifies as phenomenology, you know, so I have tried to change slightly the title to make it look a bit more like phenomenology. And the title is Some Order in What Seems Today to Be a Very Chaotic String Landscape. Actually, what I will talk about is based mostly on a recent paper with Matthias Gabardil that appeared in November, and on some ongoing thoughts that I have in recent and less recent times about flux complexifications. So, since anyway, this is a phenomenology conference, I might at least flash one transparency and tell you about some real phenomenon, which is one of the most beautiful and influential, actually, calculations in field theory, and which goes by the name of the Kondo effect, the Kondo problem. This is not particle physics phenomenology, it's condensed matter physics phenomenology, but in some ways it has made its way into string theory, as I will describe in this talk. Now let me remind you that what the Kondo problem is basically the following thing. If you are putting some magnetic impurity, a magnetic spin carrying a magnetic moment in the middle of some metal, then the conduction electrons of the metal typically will cluster around the magnetic impurity and screen the spin at long distances. And the way you describe this is by looking at a Hamiltonian, an interaction Hamiltonian, which is proportional to the spin of the magnetic impurity times the spin density of the conduction electrons. Now, the index I in this formula corresponds to the different bands or different channels of electrons that may participate in the process. And when you look at this very simple model, you find actually that the coupling lambda is asymptotically free. So in the ultraviolet, basically, the spin is not screened. And then it flows to an infrared fixed point, lambda star, and this problem has been actually very influential in the old days for discovering and developing actually the renormalization group by Wilson. And the problem was later, 10 years or 15 years, well, I'm sorry, just 5 years later, was also solved exactly through the Betansatz by Wigman and by Nathan Andrei. So it is one of these calculations that have played a role in the history of physics and of quantum field theory, and actually this same problem has made its way more recently and has been revisited, first of all by conformal field theorists, or more precisely by boundary conformal field theorists, in particular John Cardy and Affleck and Ludwig, and it was again instrumental in developing the field of boundary conformal field theory in 1+1 dimension, and even more recently by several string theorists who have been more interested in the geometrical interpretation of this effect. And there is a very incomplete set of references here. Actually, in this very very last language or point of view, what the Kondo problem is simply a special manifestation of Rob Meyer's dielectric effect. In a nutshell, what one is describing is the following thing. First of all, one projects down to S-wave electrons only and can, in some reasonable approximation, forget about the higher waves. And then when you do that, your three-dimensional space goes down to half the line, basically, the radial direction. And the spin current becomes a Vesumino-Witten model based on the group SU2 and of level K, where K is the number of electron channels that participate in the screening process. And now, this screening of the magnetic impurity can then be understood as the following very simple effect. You put SD0 brains somewhere on the sphere together, S is the total spin of the magnetic impurity, and it translates into a Chan-Payton index in the context of the Vesuminos-Witten model. So you put them at the tip, at the north pole, say, of the sphere, which is threaded by k units of Nevers-Schwarz H3 flux. And then, because of some dielectric effect, this have energetically the tendency to spread out into a D2, a Dirichlet 2 brain, with S units of magnetic wall volume flux on the wall volume of the D2 brain, since D0 brain charge has to be conserved, actually modulo K, because that's what the conserved charge is here. This has to go into a magnetic field that lives on the D2 brain. This is, in fact, a special case of a more general situation, where if you start with little less identical D2 brains, each one carrying little less prime units of magnetic flux, then this generically, under the same Kondo type of flow, will go into a direct sum of different D brains that range from S prime minus S minus 1 to S prime plus S minus 1 units of magnetic flux on the wall volume. Now, the basic mechanism that goes into this can be understood very simply as follows. From the D0 brain point of view, if one thinks about the energy of this collection of D0 brains, there are two different terms that come into play. One is basically the dimensionally reduced n equal 4 super Young-Mills action, which has in particular a trace of the commutator squared part. This is, if you wish, a superpotential part of the effective action. But then, because of the H flux that threads this three sphere, there is an extra term which would have shown up as a soft term, explicit breaking, if you were to construct a model. And this term can, in principle, be cancelled by some appropriate Ramon-Ramon flux. But if you don't quite do this, then this energy has a minimum at some non-trivial vacuum expectation values for the scalar fields, which actually are such that phi I phi j is h I j k phi k. And this is known as a fuzzy sphere. And the fuzzy sphere will break generically the U S or U n, I wrote here, symmetry down to a single U 1 if this representation is, for instance, irreducible, the SU2 representation of the sphere. Now, a very similar story lets you understand this slightly more general effect, where you have D2 brains with H flux, which is now not completely transverse to the D2 brains, but which has one direction normal to the D2 brains and two directions along the wall volume of the D2 brains. And again, if you look at the energetics, or at the potential, if you wish, energy of these D2 brains, there are two different terms. There is a term that comes straight out of the Dirac-Bonnefeld action, which is basically B plus F squared, and B is here linear in the transverse coordinate phi 3. And then there is an area term. I'm doing a non-relativistic expansion here. There is an area term which generically depends on X3. And again, you can see that in appropriate circumstances, it is energetically favorable to break the gauge symmetry of this collection of D2 brains and spread them out by turning on an F12, so a flux on the world volume of the D2 brains, and a separation in the transverse direction, satisfying this particular relation. And that's exactly what happens in this Kondo problem that I described before. Now, as I said, this talk is not really, I'm afraid, about flux compactifications, but I want to at least flash one or two thoughts about this, since this seems to be an interest of many of the people in this audience. And actually, one may ask whether this can be directly relevant to the study of flux compactifications. In fact, if you think about string theory, type 2B or type 2A or heterotic, compactified simply on two three spheres with Nevers-Schwarz 3 flux, S3 cross S3, threaded by three flux, which is volume plus volume. This is actually an extremely simple and exact example of moduli stabilization. In fact, this model has basically no moduli other than the string coupling. I'll come to this in a moment, simply because the radii of the sphere are completely frozen by the quantization of the flux that threads them. And this was, in fact, studied by us in a very early paper. And as I said, it's a simple flux compactification with no moduli. Actually, no moduli is a lie, because if you look at the potential in this theory, there is a negative potential that depends on string coupling, like minus 1 over g string squared. And therefore, there is no Minkowski or anti-de Sitter vacuum here. Actually, the vacuum is of the electrovac type, essentially equivalent to ABS 3 times R, which had been studied by Gibbons and Friedman in the early days of supergravity, so of gauge supergravities. So you may say that, well, this seems to be like not too bad a starting point to study a model without moduli. And indeed, what we have to do is somehow stabilize the last modulus, which is the string coupling. And of course, we have at our disposal some extra ingredients, which we haven't used, in particular, deep brains and orientifolds. Now, the deep brains, I have just discussed them here. Well, I haven't quite told you exactly what they are, but they are generically spherical D2 brains, which can be transported along the S3 freely, and whose radius is related to the flux that threads them, basically to the D0 brain charge that they carry. The orientifolds of this theory are also relatively straightforward to be studied, and they have been studied in these three papers. And actually, there are two kinds of orientifolds. There are orientifold points that sit at the north and south pole of the three spheres, and whose relative charge depends on whether K is even or odd. And then there are orientifold spheres that sit at the equator of the three sphere, and both of them are a priori consistent. So you may imagine that if you now start adding orientifolds and D3 brains to this model, you will add an extra term to this potential for the string coupling, which may, the sign depends on the details, but may be of the form some number over G string. And then when you look at the potential that you get in the end, what you find is actually an unstable de Sitter vacuum, a local maximum for G string sitting here, and at positive cosmological constant. That's generic and it's easy to see. Now, from this point on, as in many of these discussions, things are blurred, because I haven't taken into account back reaction of the, on the geometry of the deep brains and the orientifolds, and I can turn on also Ramon-Ramon fluxes, which I haven't done. And actually, I don't really want to discuss this here, because I wanted to make another point that will come in a moment. However, before leaving this, let me just say that very naively to my mind, it's not clear that this is a worse starting point for discussing flux compactifications of type 2 string theory than Calabi-Yau 3 or Torai. It has at least two big advantages. One is that the big back reaction at weak string coupling, which is the deformation of the metric, is already taken into account here. And this comes entirely from the Neves-Schwarz freeform flux. And the other is that it has no moduli at all, except for the string coupling. And the reason I already discussed why closed moduli are frozen, the radii basically, open string moduli are also frozen, because the only moduli of these deep brains are translations on the group manifold. But once you put an orientifold at the north pole, this freezes them completely, and they cannot move anymore. So these seem to be nice models with absolutely no moduli than the closed string moduli. But of course, the price you have to pay is that supersymmetry is not anywhere near, unless you go to one of these electrovac vacua, which break completely the maximal symmetries of four-dimensional space-time. Now, I will leave this for the moment because I wanted to tell you about one other comment about this, which may also be of some interest in the discussion of fluxes and landscapes, and which actually is slightly of a more theoretical kind. What I will try to argue is that these Vesumino-Witten deep brains can actually be generated in these models by a set of symmetries of the field equations, but not of the action of the theory. So there is this set of operators that basically takes you from one solution of the open string field equations to another, but which generically changes the tension or the G factor and other properties of these deep brains. So these are, in some sense, analogous to the Euler symmetries of the Einstein equations, or perhaps more to the point, to the following rather trivial symmetry of string theory that we know. If you take the classical supergravity action, it has a scale invariance, but this scale invariance is broken typically by flux quantization to some discrete subset. So if you think about ADS5 process 5, the radius is arbitrary a priori, but flux quantization makes it actually quantized, and there is some relic discrete scale symmetry of the problem, which is a symmetry, I repeat, of the equations, but not of the action. So there is something analogous happening here, which I wanted to show to you, and try to argue a bit that maybe it is more general than in this simple model. What I will show to you is that one can actually construct very explicitly the generators of the symmetry. And the way of doing this is in some ways intriguing and could, as I said, generalize and help to analyze the brains in other contexts, including Calabi-Yau's. Here is how this works, actually. Consider a deep brain, any deep brain at an equilibrium state, and suppose that it is perturbed away from some classical equilibrium state. If you are trying to describe this in the open string channel, you basically want to perturb the Waldschmidt Hamiltonian by some H interaction, Hi, so the evolution operator is basically the time-ordered exponential of the integral of this perturbed Hamiltonian on the boundary of the Waldschmidt. Now, this Hamiltonian depends, of course, on the gauge fields and on the position moduli deformations, I'm sorry, that you have turned on the deep brain. Now, suppose that you try to describe the same thing in the closed string channel, where the deep brain becomes what is called the boundary state, some sort of formal state in the closed string Hilbert space. Now, the way to do this is to start with the boundary state that describes the original deep brain, and then to basically act on it with something like a Wilson loop operator, the thing that I wrote down here. So this, let me not try to explain this too much, but this is basically the trace ordered, the trace of the path ordered, that's the analog of time ordering exponential, of the gauge field you turn on, which multiplies d sigma x mu, and of the coordinate deformation, which multiplies d tau x mu, where sigma now parameterizes the boundary, and tau is the closed string time, and the x's here are the fields, showing up there, are the string fields that are quantized now in the closed string channel. Now, normally you may say that here what I'm doing is overcounting because I have written down a 10-form gauge field and a 10-form coordinate field, but of course a deep brain has only gauge fields along its world volume and has coordinates in the normal bundle, in the transverse directions, and therefore, a priori, it seems as if I have written a bit too many fields up here. But this doesn't really matter, at least semi-classically, because when you apply this operator to the boundary state, a lot of these terms in the exponential will go to zero. Think, for instance, about d0 brains sitting at the point x equals to zero. Then you see, since x is equal to zero, d sigma of x is also zero at the boundary. This term goes away. And the other one gives you simply y mu at zero times d tau x mu. And these are precisely the matrix coordinates of a collection of the zero brains, and that's all that comes into this exponential. Now, on the other hand, let me write formally this new boundary state as O times the old boundary state, and ask whether I can define this operator O independently of the boundary state on which it acts. After all, I started by telling you that I perturb a given boundary conformal field theory, but now I may ask, can I define this O independently of B? And it is very easy to see that there is the following simple dictionary, as always, between world seat and target space. If you want to define O independently of B, you have to push this contour integral in the interior of the world seat, push it forward inside. Now, this necessarily comes together with a push forward of the fields that were defined on the D-brain, on the tangent and normal bundle of the D-brain, to the whole target manifold. So you end up with something that is naturally defined on the tangent plus the cotangent bundle of the target space. And this smells a bit of complex geometry, although, again, I'm not generalized complex geometry. I'm not going to have any smart comments to make about this. However, the fact is that if you want to define this operator independently of the boundary state, you have to extend now the gauge and coordinate field so that they live on the whole target space manifold. Now, this is what we may call a general defect line. It lives in the interior. And what I have written down in the previous Wilson loop are the most general renormalizable couplings you can turn on a defect line that lives in the interior of the world sheet. Indeed, d sigma tau, d sigma x mu and d tau x mu are now totally independent fields. I can multiply them by any arbitrary functions of x. I'm living in the bulk. And perturbatively, these are the generic renormalizable couplings that I can turn on. Now, the fields A and Y are, in general, renormalized by, as usual, and they actually flow to an infrared fixed point. And at this fixed point, this defect operator or line becomes conformal, meaning that it commutes with this particular combination of Ln minus L bar minus N. Once you have found such a defect operator, you can then go backwards and pull it back on the D brain. You can say, well, what happens if I pull back one of these operators to the D brain? And if there are no extra short distance singularities, that's maybe a big if, but if there aren't any, then it's easy to see that starting with any D brain that was conformal, so it was an equilibrium D brain, you end up with another one that's also conformal. Therefore, it's also an equilibrium D brain. Now, I said if this action can be correctly defined, there is at least one instance where this is automatic. This is the case when O can be made out of chiral operators entirely, in which case it separately commutes with the left and the right moving Virasoro generators, and it is becoming then what is called the topological defect line. And these topological defect lines can be deformed arbitrarily and therefore brought to the boundary without any singularities. Now, there are some trivial special cases of these operators which correspond to the usual isometries of our geometry, whether discrete or continuous. If you have a continuous isometry, there is a U1 conserved current that goes with it. And it's easy to check that exponential of I lambda J0, a translation operator, is doing exactly the right thing, translating your deep brain along the corresponding U1 isometry. But what is more interesting is that more generally, these operators will reduce the tension of the brains, in particular if they result from some non-trivial RG flow. So let's re-examine the Kondo problem in this light, actually. Let us consider the most general Wilson loop type of operator, which preserves global SU2 symmetry. This has some arbitrary couplings of the left and the right currents. The couplings are lambda and lambda bar. And TAs are here generators of the group in some representation R, which is arbitrary. And the path ordering, of course, is crucial because you have to order this operator according to the point on the loop on which you are evaluating it. Now, it is very simple to determine the infrared fixed points of this operator. Remember, this is now a defect living in the middle of the world sheet, by an argument, semi-classical argument, that is analogous to the argument that Ed Witten used to to show the existence of infrared fixed points in the bulk sigma model. The argument goes as follows. If you look at the symmetries of the Vesuvino-Witten, I remind you that they correspond to left and right independent group transformations of G, where U depends only on Z and U bar depends on Z bar, the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on the world sheet. So if you translate this into transformations of the currents, you see that J and J bar transform something like two-dimensional gauge connections. And therefore, the Wilson line that I wrote down is invariant only at special points of the couplings because these are non-abelian gauge connections. And there are three fixed points you can find, a chiral one, an anti-chiral one, where lambda is 1 over k and lambda bar is 0 or the other way around, and then a diagonal one. And you can check that at this point, what is preserved is an SU2 left cross SU2 right symmetry or an SU2 diagonal symmetry. Now, if you preserve this symmetry, it means at least semi-classically that the corresponding combination of currents that generates this symmetry commutes with your operator. And because the Virasoro generators are made out of quadratic expressions of the currents, it follows automatically that you also have this relation, but this one was obvious already at the classical level before. So assuming that you can now correctly quantize the theory preserving these relations, we have proven that there are these special conformal invariant defects that I have shown here. In fact, it is assuming these things can be defined, it is very simple also to guess what they are equal to. They are actually measuring what is called the quantum monodromy, some sort of generalized string winding and momentum on this group manifold on which the strings move. And the way this happens is very simple to understand. The classical solutions of the equations of motion factorize into a left and a right moving part in this way. These left and right moving parts can have some monodromy when you take them around the circle by sigma goes to sigma plus 2 pi. These monodromes are the same because G has to be single valued. However, our operator, chiral operator O star R at the fixed point, it is easy to see simply the trace in the Arf representation of M. And if you quantize semi-classically this theory, this is exactly a ratio of S matrix coefficients of the corresponding conformal field theory. Now, there is then a very simple CFT calculation that shows to you very easily that starting with any D-brain or any conformal boundary state, applying this operator, using this action here, you end up exactly with a linear combination of other D-brains, exactly as I described in the pictures I showed to you in the beginning. So this corresponds precisely to the flows of the quantum problem I showed. Now, in this paper with Matthias Gaberdil, much of the work, which I'm not showing, has to do with simply trying to check that this is correct, namely trying to really construct properly, regularize and renormalize these operators explicitly and check that the above semi-classical statements are correct, that the eigenvalues are those given by S over S, and that the RG flows are those that I described. And it is easy, for instance, to calculate the beta functions of these parameters, lambda and lambda prime, lambda bar. It's probably one of the quick ways of doing it, since it's all current algebra, and you find exactly this fixed point structure that I showed here. So in some sense, you see these operators describe universal independent of the D-brain, the ultraviolet D-brain, or of the spin of the magnetic impurity, RG flows in this problem. Now, in some ways, this is striking, and that's a cartoon view of why this is so. What we learn is that if we were to consider a very narrow piece of a landscape, namely D brains on this magnet, on these three spheres threaded by flux, well, we know that there are some continuous symmetries, some discrete symmetries of this problem, and this takes you around the landscape as you expect. But what these new operators do is somewhat more unusual. they take you from mountaintops to valleys or from ridges to valleys, and they do it in a universal way. You go to any mountaintop you wish, you apply it, and you go down to a valley. And this seems to be some sort of further symmetry of this very simple landscape, which is not simply encoded in the isometries of the geometry or in the low energy supergravity action. Now, of course, the question that immediately comes to mind is whether this is all very special to the Zumino-Witten models, and it is simply some sort of quantum group symmetry that we are uncovering in this result, in this way. Well, perhaps I don't really have a very convincing answer to this, but I should say that I think there is reason for optimism that this might be a more general phenomenon, and the reason is the following. Think about these conformal defects. There is a very simple way to describe them, which was in particular discussed in this paper of mine, De Boer, Diagraph, and Oguri, where you basically think of them simply as deep brains in a tensor product of two theories, say Calabi-Yau times Calabi-Yau. The reason why this is correct is that you simply take the world sheet at the defect, fold it exactly at the defect, and think of the defect as a boundary. But now there are two sheets going to the left. These are two independent conformal field theories interacting only at the boundary. So there is a very simple way to write down the equations for these beasts. They are simply deep brains, but in a tensor product theory. And therefore, there should be a lot of interesting solutions. It should be possible to find lots of them. Once you find some, you can then pull them back and try to act with them as I described in this problem, and perhaps try to map mountaintops to ridges of the landscape of the brains in Calabi-Yaus. There is an independent argument which comes from the connection, eventual connection of three-dimensional topological field theory, as has been developed by Fuchs, Runkel, and Schweigert in particular. I'm near the end. I just want to conclude by summarizing the two main points I was trying to get across. Point one, I think that this S3 cross S3 compactifications with O3, O7, or D3D7 brains may be nice alternative starting points to study flux fiber. Almost all moduli are stabilized, and the back reaction, the big back reaction at weak string coupling, is already incorporated in the geometry by rounding off the space from a torus to a sphere, essentially. So they deserve, I think, further study, and I hope some of you people might try to be interested in this. Second point, these conformal defects, which are simply deep brains in tensor product, or doubled conformal field theories, may generate symmetries of the open string field equations, but not necessarily of the action. And by connecting ridges with valleys, they could put some order in what looks right now, at least to me, as a completely chaotic string landscape, and it is interesting to check whether any of these in particular can extend to Calabi-Yaus. So I think that's all I have to say. Oh, the cosmological constant is basically 1 over G string squared times 1 over radius 1 squared plus 1 over radius 2 squared. So it goes to 0 when you decompactify the spheres, of course, and it is the sum of the inverse squares generically.